This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Here's a question. Is broadband internet a public utility like water or electricity? Well, the federal government says so. More and more lawmakers are making a push to increase the availability and lower the cost of this service, including a project here in Connecticut to develop ultra-high-speed gigabit internet networks. Opponents say there's already plenty of service out there provided by broadband companies, and the government should just stay the heck out of it. So that's our conversation today, Where We Live, 860-275-7266. Comment on our website, wnpr.org/where we live. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. For an update on the Connecticut Gig Project, we welcome back to the show Kevin Lembo, who's the comptroller of the state of Connecticut. Welcome back, sir.
Good morning, John.
And Ellen Katz is here, Connecticut's Consumer Counsel. Thank you so much for being here, Ellen.
Thank you so much.
So first of all, update us. I'll start with you, Ellen, on what is the Connecticut Gig Project?
The Connecticut Gig Project is an effort by multiple stakeholders, all the way from businesses and community leaders, all the way up to folks like Kevin Lembo and Senator Beth Bayh and myself, to develop ultra-high-speed infrastructure in Connecticut to try to reach every single citizen in Connecticut with a level of broadband that is both affordable and at adequate speeds to meet their needs.
So that service is not out there now in your estimation?
What availability there is for the ultra-high-speed is pretty limited and is extremely expensive, like thousands of dollars per month.
So, Kevin Lembo, from where you sit as the controller of the state, why is this so important to you?
Yeah, I approach this, John, as an economic development issue. So, we talk a lot about what's happening to Connecticut's economy. Why are we losing the kinds of jobs that we know are really the drivers of things like the income tax? And when you get right down to it, these data jobs that we have many, many of right now are really, I think, the secret sauce in getting us sort of out of where we are now. And if it's about growing the pie, those young entrepreneurial folks with big tech ideas may want to stay close to their families if we give them the infrastructure to do that.
So let's pull these a couple things apart, because I think we're talking about business competitiveness. We're talking about the possibility of getting very high speed service to people who may be entrepreneurs. But we're also trying to get more service to people who maybe don't have any service right now. Let's talk about that part of it first, Kevin Lembo. What is the compelling reason for the state to invest in this when it just comes to making sure that more people are connected to the internet in any way?
So the business model right now, I really draw parallels between the evolution of the highway system, right? So someone was walking across somebody else's field with their cart to get down to the waterfront to ship their stuff wherever it was going or to sell it at market. And over time, government realized, okay, that pathway actually is a common good. It's a public good, and we need to do something about that beyond letting land barons toll you all the way to the market. So now when you flip to sort of the internet and broadband as that same kind of thing, the government really has a different responsibility in this than private industry. Private industry has built this out to their credit. They've built out significant portions of this around the state. But when you look at where the fiber is, for example, it's not in places where the return on investment for a private entity would justify the build. So that's fine for a private enterprise to make that decision that we're not going to go there. But as a government, we have a more global responsibility to make sure it's available to, you know, not just folks in downtown Hartford, New Haven, or Stamford, but in Dixwell Avenue in New Haven and in the north end of Hartford as well. So in taking a more global look at this is really part of government's responsibility. And, you know, look, we have difference of opinion sometimes about how to get there, and it will likely end up being a regionally driven fix in all of it. But we need to go, and we need to do this together because it is really the path forward for our economy.
So I wanted to – there's sort of three legs to this stool in my mind. There's the economic development needs of our businesses, and it's pretty clear from all the high-tech businesses in particular we're hearing from that a lot of businesses aren't getting the speeds they need, and if they can get it, a lot of times it's at a very exorbitant cost. There's also a surprising number of people in Connecticut, thousands, who have access only to dial-up speeds or sometimes even dial-up when you talk about the northwest corners. And then the third leg of the stool is the digital equity stools. You know, when the digital equity issues, when we look at, say, the students at Bridgeport High, I was out there for an event with Senator Murphy. He said, how many people have internet access at home? And only two-thirds of the class raised their hand. And the other third said, listen, we know it's important, but there's just sometimes we don't have the extra $20 a month. And it's not like you can go buy a little bit of broadband if this month you have $20. So I think we need to make sure that we are reaching the businesses, reaching every resident, and making it affordable. So affordable access for all is sort of the platform, the public interest goal that I keep going to. And how do we achieve that?
So you talked about the cost earlier that you say for very high-speed internet can run into the thousands. We're going to have some folks from this industry on in just a little bit. But maybe you can talk about some of the cost barriers and just what we mean. When we say a gig, that could be a lot or that could be a little. I mean, I don't know how much it is. Explain what the Connecticut Gig Project and getting this amount of broadband access to people, how that would be different from what you get from, I don't know, Comcast right now in downtown Hartford.
Okay, sure. So your average home speed is probably around 9 to 10 megabits. A gig is 1,000 megabits. So you're talking an increase of almost 100. And so, no, not everyone has a need for a gig in their home today. But if we're going to invest in infrastructure, let's invest in the best infrastructure that there is, the world-class, what they call future-proof infrastructure, and let's concentrate on it's an incremental approach, so let's start with the businesses, but let's also make sure we're finding solutions that reach the people who have nothing. And also, we got to keep looking at affordability because, yes, we are one of the most connected states in the country. There's no doubt about that. But if we said, well, listen, we're doing better than everybody else because 85% of our citizens have electricity, isn't that great? We wouldn't stop the conversation there. We'd say, all right, how do we reach the rest of them, and how do we make sure it's affordable? So that's the conversation that I've been focusing on.
Do you want to jump in?
But then the speed issue is a real issue. So, Connecticut, we'll often hear, well, Connecticut's got great connectivity, and we do as a general matter, but speeds at 9, or even let's give folks the benefit of the doubt, you know, the Akamai State of the Internet Service said we're at like 16. Okay, fine. But that still puts us behind all of our major regional competitors in Massachusetts, in New York, in New Jersey, in Rhode Island. So even the folks right around us have better speeds than we do.
And do they have a program like the one that you're envisioning, or are their speeds all driven by, you know, the market, all by, you know, companies that are running that?
It's a combination of things. Yeah. You know, the private market stepped up and others sort of incentivized and pushed them to do that. But the question isn't really necessarily only a comparison with us within our nation. So don't compare us to Mississippi and Alabama. We want to compete with South Korea and Japan. So the United States overall is about 24th in all of this. We're behind Latvia. You know, so, okay, we need to figure that piece out. And then South Korea, in comparison to the 16, South Korea's at 83. Japan's at 75. And Singapore's at 108.
Where's Norway? We always talk about Norway and Sweden.
Don't have the Norway numbers in front of me right now.
If this was a presidential debate, we'd be talking about Sweden for some reason.
Yeah, but I can tell you about Sweden. My background's in Sweden. Is that they have one of the most robust fiber networks in the world. And so they're attracting all kinds of interesting business and tech and innovation because of that. Because everyone knows if you go in, you're going to get access to these high speeds and it's going to be at these lower prices. You know, and I just want to make the point, the fact that we're having this conversation and talking about the challenges in Connecticut is not a bad news story. In fact, it's quite the opposite. The whole country literally is watching what Connecticut is doing because we've energized from the ground roots up all these communities, all these mayors and first selectmen and businesses saying, we need to change what's available. We need to bring down the prices. And how are we going to do that? Let's work together. And that is really a dynamic, interesting conversation that the whole industry is watching. My office, the Office of Consumer Counsel and the Office of State Broadband, we are approached constantly by folks saying, how did you do that? And how do we do that in my state? And how can we work with you? So this is a really great time to be in Connecticut looking at broadband.
We're talking with Ellen Katz, who's Connecticut Consumer Counsel, and also Kevin Lembo, the comptroller of the state. And we're talking about the Connecticut Gig Project, an attempt to bring very high-speed internet to more people in the state. We're going to be talking with people from the industry as well in just a moment. We want to hear from you, 860-275-7266. How would very high-speed internet change your life? Are you willing to maybe pay more in taxes to get better internet service? And that's what I want to talk to you next about, Kevin Lembo. A big part of your job is taking a look at how much money's coming in, how much money's going out. We always see these charming little reports from you that were, you know, $50 million in the red once again, or $75 million, whatever it is.
I think you're understating
it. I'm understating. Well, look, we seem to be, I think it's fair to say, in a bit of a fiscal bind.
Indeed.
To put it mildly. How the hell do we pay for this? This is all a great idea, but how do we pay for this when seemingly we're cutting almost every other part of state government right now?
I think the assumption that state government's going to pay for this is false. I see very limited role for state government, and mostly in backing up the existing providers to build out in places where the return on investment may not be there. Beyond that, I feel like this is a disruptive sort of conversation. Government's role, I think primary at this point, is to really be a sharp stick in the marketplace and say, we need to get moving. We need to have more open access on fiber when fiber is built. We need to take those free market principles that everyone seems to be so happy and supportive of and actually introduce those into this market. I don't know about you, but where I live, I have no real choice. You know, I've got a cable choice, I've got a DSL choice, and I can put a dish on the house if I want to. That's it. So I don't think anyone is suggesting that state government's going to plop down a big pile of money and we're just going to build it out, because the regional differences are so different that it doesn't even make sense. More providers in the space, incentives where we need the build, where the return on investment isn't there, some sort of revolving loan fund, as has already been proposed by Ellen and others at the Capitol. All of that together gets you to the build that you need, not sort of like let's overbuild and rebuild an entire network.
But what about that connectivity? I mean, when we're talking about wiring up the state, when we talk about broadband access, fiber cables being laid in the ground, I mean, that, I assume, Ellen, means towns and municipalities working together in a way that maybe they're not working right now. Is that part of it?
Oh, absolutely. And they are having these conversations, and they are. But now they're saying, we want to do this. Now, how do we do that? And that's part of what we're doing, is trying to create frameworks whereby they can work together and essentially create coalitions. And you mentioned this idea of, you know, additional taxes or what's it going to cost. And that's absolutely an essential part of the conversation, as Kevin says. He unfortunately has to be the messenger of bad news with at the state level
Bringer
a lot of the
of
time.
Doom.
Yes.
He does it so cheerily. But anyway. Yeah.
But what I hear from consumers all the time is they complain about their cable bills. They're paying hundreds of dollars a month, or they're getting slow speeds for hundreds of dollars a month. And if I say to them, well, listen, if we can find a way to bring those bills down to, instead of from $200 a month, or from a business perspective, if they need a gig, $3,000 a month, bring it down to a level where you're getting the highest level speeds for between $70 and $100 a month, that's real money in people's pockets immediately, and that's doable. That's what's going on in other municipalities in other parts of the country.
So before we take a break and bring in some folks who are going to be talking about the business side of this, I should ask, I mean, one potential outcome of this budget crisis that we have is that in Governor Malloy's latest budget proposal, the Office of State Broadband actually faces elimination. Am I right about that?
Funding for the office is proposed to be cut. The office itself is created by statute.
So if you didn't have an office to move this along, that would probably pose an issue. And another thing that faces a cut is the Connecticut Education Network. This is a network that already connects through very high-speed connections things like state libraries around the state, high schools, colleges. That would receive a cut, too. I mean, what can you tell us about that and the cut to the funding for the Office of State Broadband? It seems like those things could actually cripple some of your efforts.
Well, certainly that would make it more difficult. CEN, the Connecticut Education Network, is what we call a middle mile network. It's sort of, if you think of it, the state highway for broadband. And so what we're talking about is essentially building the local roads to reach the communities from that state highway, that middle mile, very high speed network. They can do bursts of 100 gig. And so, yes, I think it's crucial that we maintain that as this incredible resource that we already have, and then as a building block for, as we say, reaching out into the communities with those local roads, with those local fiber-to-the-home projects.
So the way Ellen just put it, Kevin Lembo, if indeed the CEN network is a state highway that really has very high-speed access, and we're looking to build local roads, a nearly $3 million cut in earmarks for the Connecticut Education Network would seem to me, being a layperson, be like not repairing the potholes in the state highway and having it, you know, start to break down. Am I right?
Right, and shifts the burden down onto the participating municipalities and libraries and others that either are already in or were about to or were thinking about coming in to the CEN.
So, I mean, how does that proposal damage what you guys are looking at?
Well, I mean, I think it's clearly bad news, but we are so far ahead of many other places because of the Connecticut Education Network that work needs to be done to preserve that. Now, just because it gets a cut in funding doesn't mean that the network disappears. It just means that it's challenged and it pushes that burden down, but it will continue to operate.
We're talking today about the challenge of very high-speed internet across the state. Wouldn't it be great if we could all get easy, affordable, high-speed broadband? People from the business community say we already have that across the state. We'll be talking to a few of them coming up next. We're in studio with Kevin Lembo, the Comptroller of the State, Ellen Katz, Connecticut's Consumer Council. Taking some calls from you in a moment at 860-275-7266. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today we're talking about the Connecticut Gig Project. It's an idea to build out more broadband internet access across the state. Kevin Lembo and Ellen Katz, the Comptroller and the Consumer Council, are here in studio. We're going to get to some of your phone calls in a moment at 860-275-7266. Just this update coming from our producer, Tucker Ives. Turns out from Tech Insider, they say that Norway is actually number 25 in high speed, so they're one behind the U.S. So get on it, Norway. Now we're going to bring in the conversation Eric Brown. He's Associate Counsel at the Connecticut Business and Industry Association, otherwise known as the CBIA. Eric, good to talk to you. Welcome to Where We Live.
Well, thank you very much, John. Thanks for having me.
So you've been critical of the Connecticut Gig Project in part because of a potential cost to taxpayers. Tell us what you're thinking about.
Well, I know I only have a few minutes, so I'll just sort of share with you my perspective. First of all, I have to chuckle a little bit because we're always the ones criticized for being too negative in Connecticut. And here we're talking about something where Connecticut is in a tremendous leadership position, not only nationally, but internationally. I have to say, you know, we keep getting different studies, different statistics sent our way that are conflicting. But when we look at organizations like the FCC and the White House and others that put us at the very top or, you know, number two maybe in the country, in terms of access and speeds, like you've talked about. So number one, it's a great asset that we ought to be crowing about and not looking at it as a deficit. Another thing I think we have to, speaking of deficits, look at this in the context of where we are as a state. We've got tremendous fiscal challenges that we're facing. And, you know, I was talking to a commissioner the other day who said, you know, the days of doing more with less are over. We're now in the days of doing less with less. So this in this kind of environment, to talk about, you know, the hundreds of millions of dollars that would go into putting government in charge or even as a partner or whatever model you want to call it in a high-tech business like broadband is a challenging notion for us to get our arms around. Particularly if you think about, you know, what's going on with the Do-It program, the computer mess at DMV. This is not like stringing lines across, you know, phone poles. It's not like laying a road down that's going to be there for 20 years. This is a constantly changing, evolving, high-technology business. And Connecticut is in a tremendous spot in terms of our private sector ability to do this. Those are some of the concerns that we have.
Let me ask you a couple questions about that. Obviously, the CBIA represents a lot of different types of businesses across the state. I would assume that a lot of those businesses would like to be able to get access to cheaper broadband internet access so that they could do more high-tech work. Right now, that can often cost an awful lot of money. Wouldn't it be good for your constituents to have any project, no matter how it's put together, that gets Connecticut even more competitive than it is?
Well, let me give you my perspective on that. You're talking really about demand. So I've been at CBIA for over 20 years. I've been doing energy and telecom for about 5 years. I can honestly tell you I can't recall a single call from a business complaining about the speed of their internet service or access to internet service. We have probably about a 50-person board of directors, companies large and small all over the state that help set our priorities every year. This has never been a focus of theirs, except to say in recent years, please keep the government out of it. We had a conference in 2015 dedicated to this because it was getting a lot of discussion. 150 people at the conference. We had a breakout on this. Nobody came. We've done member surveys. This never comes up as a blip. So, you know, where the stories are coming from about businesses complaining and they can't get what they need, is just something that's I can just tell you it's outside of my experience, and I think our experience as a whole at CBIA.
Kevin Limbo, is the state of Connecticut going to run this project? I mean, is this going to be a government top-down? Maybe you can explain this to us, how the Connecticut Gig Project, if it comes to fruition in the way you're looking at it, how exactly it is managed?
Yeah, I mean, look, everyone knows that who's involved in any level that's a municipally driven effort that has some level of coordination at the state level. I don't think I've ever said out loud and never would and frankly would not support a statewide build and incurring additional debt to the taxpayers of Connecticut. But I think the flip side of that somehow this is a non-issue, that we have a solution in search of a problem, is probably not accurate based on my conversations with business, which clearly may be different than Eric's. But I was at a chamber meeting in the northeast part of the state just this week, and a man who runs a large engineering and design firm there said he lost his very first employee ever, and that employee had to move to a place where he had the level of connectivity he needed to be able to do his new job for an engineering firm in Seattle, where he was going to be working all over the globe. Now, look, that's sort of just a micro, right? But he's not alone. Shelley Best on Farmington Avenue with an incubator for folks who were trying to start new businesses, $30,000 to pull fiber across Farmington Avenue to the 226 on Farmington Avenue. C-Click Fix is on the record. There are little tech startups that frankly don't go to big business lobby institutional kinds of meetings. These are 1, 2, 10 startup sort of companies, and they need access. They come out of academia where they have incredible access, and they get out into the world and they try to plug in, and they cannot transact business at a speed and volume that makes sense for the work that they're doing.
And there are lots of big high-tech companies who are involved in this. The Connecticut Technology Council has embraced the work we've done. In fact, they helped us do a listening tour. They have very recently become much more public in their support of it. Jackson Labs has been very supportive of the work that we're doing. They've come and spoken repeatedly at our conferences about the need for figuring out a way to get higher speeds at lower prices to our businesses. And listen, I agree with Eric, absolutely. We are in a leadership position, both with what we have, but we're also in a leadership position in that we're saying, okay, how do we do this? And how do we continue to deliver what our citizens need? And how do we bring down costs? And I do want to note, this is not a conversation that we can just sit back and eventually have. The three states are investing heavily in broadband infrastructure. One is California. One is New York, which is investing $500 million at the state level. One is Massachusetts, which is investing $40 million. And in fact, Vermont has already invested $40 million. We're not talking about massive state investment, but we are saying we got to get creative given our financial situation and find public leaders who will find private partners to drive this further into our communities and meet the needs of those high-tech businesses.
And that's what I want to ask you about, Eric, is, you know, we've been spending maybe too much time on our program talking about the impact or what it can tell us about General Electric deciding to move to Boston, and we talk about a high-tech hub, and we talk about what the state of Massachusetts is doing to attract companies like that. I guess the question is, if our neighboring states like Massachusetts and New York are making investments like this and saying, yeah, we're already doing good, but this is the future, man. We got to invest big time in trying to make sure that the businesses of tomorrow want to locate in our states. Shouldn't we be like doing that?
Well, I think you ought to have the governor and legislative leaders on and ask them where exactly they look to find $500 million to put into this. I mean, if you go out and you talk to people and you say, sure, if you say, geez, how would you like, you know, a gig service at $70 a month? Well, who's not going to put their hand up for that? But that's not a realistic conversation to have. I mean, I think it's acknowledged here that, you know, I've heard, well, it's not going to be these people paying or that people paying. Well, who's going to pay for this? You know, you mentioned New York, $500 million. Where's that coming from in Connecticut?
The thing that I just want to understand, let's just say, and I'm just throwing this out there, let's say I pay $100 for internet service right now, and I'm able to get my payment down to $30 for better internet service, and I pay some fractional more cost in taxes than on top of that. I'm getting better service. I'm paying somebody different, but the service is better and it's to more people. Isn't that math that works?
Well, you know, I think in the vast majority of the state, there already is competition. I think in West Hartford alone, which I know, you know, Senator Bayh is interested in this, and I'm told there's five, maybe six different companies people have to choose from. You know, I guess the question is, you know, is this something that we want government to get involved with? Again, particularly in this kind of business, notwithstanding that, you know, we already have tremendous situation in the state. I mean, how many people, how many businesses are after a gigabyte of service? And even if they are, they can get it. Do they have to pay for it? Yeah. Would it be nice if we could go out and interview, you know, go to a community hall and say how many people would like, you know, a new reliable car for, you know, $2,000? Well, everybody will put their hand up, but that, you know, that's not a realistic conversation to have, nor do I think this one is. And it's certainly not one that needs to be a focus of what's going on in Connecticut, given where we are. We need to have government focus on its core services. We need to get our fiscal house in order, not search around where we're going to find whether it's $300,000 for a broadband office or $500 million to invest in the expansion and socialize the cost. Is this where we're heading? What's the next business we're going to get in and decide, you know, well, we need to socialize this cost across everybody? Is that really the direction we're headed in? There's proposals to do that with a retirement plan. We've seen it with health insurance. Where are we going in Connecticut?
Eric Brown is Associate Counsel at the Connecticut Business and Industry Association. Eric, thanks for your time. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
I want to welcome in Paul Cinelli, who's President and CEO of the New England Cable and Telecommunications Association, who represents this industry. Paul, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me again.
You've heard a little bit of what Eric said, and you've listened to our other guests on this. From where you sit, what is your issue with the Connecticut Gig project that we have right now, and how do you think that your industry could work with the state in a new way?
Well, first of all, we've spent over $2 billion in the last 6 years building out a network second to none. Currently, we are in the process of deploying what's called DOCSIS 3.1, which will give gigabit service to all residential areas. Now, let's talk about economic development. We provide anywhere from 1 to 100 gigabits of service for those type of businesses that are data-driven that need it. It is there. The FCC just came out in late December with their latest report, Measuring Broadband America. Connecticut, second fastest in the United States. The average download speeds are more like 57 to 60 megabits, not the numbers that you've heard. This is the FCC. Now, I represent Atlantic Broadband, Charter, Cox, Cablevision, and Comcast, and we have among the fastest speeds around. And on the business side, there is no business that is lacking for service. Now, you've heard other misinformation. Massachusetts has invested this. Vermont has invested this. New York has invested this. Well, I've been directly involved in Massachusetts and Vermont. What they have invested their dollars in is a backbone in unserved areas. Connecticut is very fortunate in the sense that we pass 94 to 95% of the households in Connecticut. And wherever we are, they can get broadband speeds. Now, Massachusetts has a big swath in Western Mass. They built a backbone with that 40, 50 million. They're not competing with private enterprise. Vermont, the same thing. We work with Vermont on different smaller projects, but they are looking at all these other aspects. They are not overbuilding. They're not looking to compete. Now the bill for $20 million bond has been introduced. It's Raise Bill 331, and that's the worst type of tax, because in a changing environment where communications changes on a weekly basis, your children and grandchildren are going to be left holding the bag. Look at Groton, sold for $550,000 in 2013 at a loss of $30 million. Taxpayers are responsible still for $27 million. The children and grandchildren of those who made the mistake.
One question I have,
you know, and if I can just finish. Senator Thune, who is the Senate Commerce Committee chair, mm-hmm. he just came out last week and was talking. He's reintroducing his Mobile Now bill for 5G wireless broadband. They are testing 5G to provide gig service in a wireless manner. We're in a competitive cage match with the wireless providers. This is real. This is not Memorex.
And I apologize. I just want to jump in because I don't want to get too far from original points you made, because Ellen Katz had brought up a number earlier about how much it costs a company per month to provide this type of gig service. She threw out a number of it could cost up to $3,000 a month. Is that an accurate number? And a question I have is, if we want businesses who need that sort of service to be competitive in the state, should or could that number be lower?
I cannot address that particular number. You know, whatever company offered that or was trying to make a deal, you'd have to bring in the particular.
Does that sound ballpark right?
No, that's. That's on the high side.
So give me, just so I understand how much it is. How much would it cost? How much would it cost for a business to have a gig service right now across most of the state that's available?
I don't have that number. And it's not something that's right off the shelf. It depends on how far you are from fiber right now and how much we have to build, how long you're willing to commit to a contract. There are a lot of different factors that go into pricing.
But I guess
what the particular companies have, you can certainly invite them on, and I'm sure they'll tell you how they arrive at pricing.
Well, I guess, and I asked your colleague at the CBIA this earlier, because I'm kind of dumb about this stuff, and I just want to make sure that I'm getting the math right in my head. What I think I'm hearing is an attempt by some folks at the state level to put together a municipally driven plan to work with business to try to provide more service and try to get more high-speed internet access into more people's homes. Some people think that sounds an awful lot like socializing it and putting it in government's hands. My question is for the consumer, right? If it costs $100 for me right now, and that's way too much for me to get the sort of service I need, or $1,000 or whatever it is, how can we work to bring down that cost so that more people can do more business in the state, more high-tech business that we need that sort of broadband internet access for, whether it's through companies and more competition or whether it's through the government intervening? How do we get it so that people pay less money in whatever way possible? Isn't that something that we need to work at, Paul?
What you're suggesting is that government should engineer a competitive future that is, in many respects, already here.
No, I'm asking, is there a business solution to the problem of people paying too much for the service?
Well, you know, first the assumption is they're paying too much. We have a complete menu from the lowest introductory speeds up to the highest speeds. So it's not like one size fits all. First they tried to say that speed was the issue, but all the government studies have made a lie of that. Speed is not the issue. For the most part, availability is not the issue. Now it's price. And somehow they have some economic model that's going to give you free internet. I mean, God bless you, but it just doesn't exist that way.
But I'll have Kevin Lemieux jump in, because I don't think anybody's talking about free internet.
It's competition. So I don't care where you are. There's a monopoly or a duopoly when you have choices, only one or two, around who's going to provide your internet service. What you're hearing is, look, and I agree with a ton of what Eric just said, but all sorts of flags go up for me when I hear an industry rep talk the way I'm hearing right now, because it's all about sort of, this is my cheese, don't come near it. Consumers are not happy. Their trust of their cable and DSL companies is low. The price, we know, is high. Nobody's suggesting a free car or a free this or a free that. What we want is competition on cost and quality. And there's a couple of ways to get there, but one way or another, we need to get there. We're all very fond, again, of the free markets. This is the way you get there, by competition. So let's just open it up. Let's just have multiple ISP providers running on the same lines, and let's see who the winners actually are.
Let me just give you some examples, because I want to push back on this idea that every business already has access to what they want at a reasonable price. We went out, we released a report in January. We brought in engineers to test the speeds at various locations in the state. We focused on Hartford and the northwest corner, not to do a full study, but just to give an example to demonstrate there continue to be problems even here in the capital city. We looked at Scott's Jamaican Bakery, which is a commercial bakery with multiple locations on Windsor Street. And their internet level is so low, it's around 1 or 2 megabits, that in order to send an email, they have to hang up the phone. And they've been trying for years to get better connectivity from Comcast, from Frontier. They got a quote from Comcast to bring service down the street at a cost of $693,000. That was the first quote. There was a second quote eventually of $250,000. I'm sorry, but $250,000 to get you access, not to gigabit speeds, but to cable speeds, that's a problem. And that's a problem for multiple
businesses. But Ellen, I'll just say, are you trying to then solve the wrong problem? I mean, and let's, because if indeed we are as wired as Paul Cianelli says we are across the state, and if we do have competitive high speeds in a way that many other states don't, is it fair to say that maybe the real problem we need to solve, government needs to solve, is the problem you just addressed, which is we've got to be able to make that last mile connection for some people, not for gigabit internet service, but just for internet service, for competitive internet service, to get it to the rest of the 5% of the people who don't have it. I mean, are we kind of barking up the wrong tree by talking about this ultra high speed lane for the whole state when what we really have a problem with is the issue of getting a little bit of cable a couple miles so that a bakery doesn't have to pay $250,000 to send an email?
Well, there's three legs to the stool, as I said. There is reaching the people who don't have adequate speeds today. There are bringing down costs for low-income folks who can't afford basic service. And then there is this problem of bringing high-speed internet gigabit speeds to the high-tech businesses, which, as I said, Connecticut Technology Council and others have said is a problem. So if we are going to focus on bringing a solution, let's focus on a solution that addresses all three and invest in state-of-the-art technology, which is fiber optics, which is capable of doing gigabit speeds, 100 gigs. You just change the technology at the end. It is, as we say, future-proof. And I have heard a lot of discussion about the evolving wireless structure and what's coming down the pike. But wireless goes from tower to tower, and from the tower, it goes into fiber and goes to the next spot. So you're not going to skip the need for fiber backhaul or fiber network if you want to bring these high speeds in to meet the needs of our tech businesses.
I'm wondering, Paul, before I let you go, this part of the stool that we were just talking about making sure that even adequate service gets to some places, including businesses right here, you know, 2 miles from my building, into places like Hartford. Where does the industry stand on that? How can we do a better job statewide of doing that sort of thing?
Well, it's a couple of things I want to address. First of all, in terms of the cable telecommunications industry, we've been on the forefront of closing the digital divide. We have programs called Internet Essentials. Comcast has that. Connect to Compete with the other companies. We offer discounted broadband service. We even offer, in some cases, discounted PCs. But the other thing is you have to understand 70% of Americans access the Internet in a wireless fashion through their phone, through their iPad, through other devices. And Wi-Fi is the primary way most consumers connect to the Internet. And that's why in Connecticut, we've built out almost 200,000 Wi-Fi hotspots, and we're going to continue to do this. So in many ways, the proponents are talking about a stagnant technology that is evolving on a weekly basis. And, you know, with the deficit, the next year's deficit pegged at $900 million, almost $1 billion, and we're talking about spending money where competition already exists, new technology is around the corner. It just doesn't make any sense.
Thank you very much, and I want to thank our guest who joined us by phone today, Paul Cianelli, who's president and CEO of the New England Cable and Telecommunications Association. Paul, thanks. I hope to talk to you again soon.
Thank you, John. I always enjoy being on your program.
When we come back, we're going to be talking to some folks who are working on this in various cities, including New Haven and also Chattanooga, Tennessee. We'll check back in with how Chattanooga is doing. We'll take some of your calls as well about broadband internet access in the state. 860-275-7266. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up on Monday's show, from the outbreak of Zika to the spread of Lyme disease, experts will take our questions on some of the biggest public health issues to hit the news recently, including what the real risks are. That's coming up on Monday's show. I hope you can join us. Very quickly, as we talk about high-speed internet access in the state, let's go to Chris in Chaplin. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
I just wanted to bring up that broadband service is basically a cash cow for the existing broadband providers. So they've made big investments in infrastructure, but now they're basically, for what they're charging, they're pulling in more than 90% profit. So Time Warner, for instance, has a 97% profit margin. I mean, that really is what's happening.
And Chris, I take your point certainly, but just to be fair, what they'll say to you is they did build out this infrastructure that we're sitting on right now. I mean, they spent the money to do it.
Right, but in other parts of the world, people are paying a lot less for a lot more bandwidth than they are here. So it's an artificially inflated price based on there being a monopoly. So I think a lot of the resistance is to basically having this public initiative erode their profits.
Chris, thank you very much for the phone call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Zach is in New Haven. Hi, Zach.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's up?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a software engineer. Internet is my lifeline. I work. I'm employed by a New Haven tech startup that has nearly 40 employees. Couldn't be more supportive of this plan. When I hear the details of this plan, I don't see government entering private enterprise. I see, you know, government taking leadership in a market that needs it, and that's been basically Comcast-type monopoly markets.
Zach, and I'm going to let you go just because, and I thank you very much for your phone call, because I want to get to someone who's calling from New Haven here. Daryl Jones is the New Haven City Controller, who's been active in issues like this. And Daryl, thanks for joining us on the program. I appreciate it.
Sure, no problem. The City Controller and also the acting CIO for the technology group in New Haven, and almost a year and a half ago when we started this initiative, we've changed the paradigm. We've changed how we look at internet, and we brought awareness to our consumers, and we see a great opportunity, and we see a great opportunity where we can provide savings to our residents, we could provide faster speeds, you know, and one of the things that I want to point out, and I heard some of the conversations before, is that we need internet access, not just Wi-Fi, because you cannot apply for a job on a cell phone. You cannot give the advantage to a student reading or studying using a phone. They need internet access in their home so that they can actually learn and get ahead, close the digital divide. And that's something under Mayor Harp's leadership. She wants to do that. She wants to give the competitive edge to everybody. And the other thing we pointed out, we recognize by having this discussion, we've actually looked at it in a way where, hey, we can generate a revenue, both on the city side, which will help our residents, and in our constituents in many ways that we've never seen before. Just one other point is that looking at our own infrastructure, the city alone spends anywhere between $35,000 and $40,000 a month to have that type of internet access and telecommunication access because we need to. Because we have to provide public safety and all that stuff. And that's essential to the city. But if we own our own network or if we have this partnership, all that goes away.
Well, let me bring in somebody, Ken Hayes, who we've spoken with before, president and CEO of the Enterprise Center in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Here's a city that got wired some time ago. And Ken, maybe you can quickly just tell us what's happening in Chattanooga and how it could be a template for some of what we're seeing here in Connecticut.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think as folks know, hopefully your listeners do, Chattanooga was really the first mover in deployment of fiber from a municipality area to cover the entire, you know, service area that our electric utility covers. We've deployed fiber to 600 square miles. Over 170,000, you know, businesses, homes, customers have access now to actually 10 gigabit symmetrical service. We are without a doubt the fastest wired, connected city in the world right now. And we went through a lot of the issues that you went through 7 or 8 years ago, with where the incumbents are sitting there saying, well, we do this, we do that. The truth of the matter, it's not an apples to oranges comparison. Wireless, as your previous caller said, is not the answer. I mean, at the end of the day, this all has to be backhauled. And what we're learning is that there's more and more and more needs for this infrastructure. Back when Mayor Corker, who is now our U.S. Senator, went to the incumbents, and actually as the EPB was looking to deploy fiber, and said, will you all do this? And we got a categorically no, you don't need it. We can make do with what we've got. That's just not true. And so what we've done, and it's been a huge economic impact, is I think we've shown the country and the world that the future is communities like Chattanooga and hopefully communities like Connecticut that are will deploy this. And that, if the incumbents want to go do it, great. But if they don't, then the municipalities and states and other ways ought to be looking at ways to go do that.
Okay, so, Ken, I just got a couple minutes with you here, but if you can give us the thumbnail blueprint for how to make that happen. I mean, how do you have the conversation with businesses that say we got good enough internet access right now, we don't need government playing in the sandbox? Give us a blueprint, please, because clearly we need to figure out how to talk about this, at least in Connecticut.
Every community is different. In our case, it was our electric utility that deployed it. And, we have a municipal-owned electric utility, and they did it actually to make our smart grid one of the smartest in the countries. But you have other communities, that have taken different approaches to it. I think Santa Monica, where, as I understand it, where a lot of what's going on in Connecticut is headed, you do incremental sort of moves on that. But I think is that part of the problem is you've got to overcome is you've got to develop champions that will sit there and say that for the competitive viability of our communities and our regions, we've got to go do it. And so I think that, as I understand the efforts in Connecticut, that's exactly what's happening. It's a long haul. And in our case, we had to go through multiple lawsuits, for EPB ultimately to do it. We've actually got a case now that the federal the FCC ruled that that EPB could go outside its service area. We've got schools and folks that are still on dial-up a quarter of a mile to a mile outside the service area, but these incumbents are sitting there saying to the legislature, no, EPB shouldn't be allowed to go do it. So we've got, the FCC's ruled, there's bills in the legislature. It's always a continual battle, but I think the key thing is that organizations that have developed in Connecticut need to just sort of turn it up and go full steam ahead, because we, this country used to be number one in the world for internet capabilities. We're now, depending on what studies, 18 to 28. And, having listened to whoever it was from the New England Technology Cable stuff, it's the same arguments they use all over. They're just not true.
Ken Hayes, President and CEO of the Enterprise Center in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Thank you so much for joining us, sir. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you also to Daryl Jones, New Haven City Controller. We just have a minute left, Kevin Limbo. Okay, so where are we now in this conversation? We've heard an awful lot of voices saying an awful lot of things, and Ken's been doing this for a while too, right? These are the same voices on all sides. We don't have money as a state to be making big investments in this. That is absolutely true. No one's going to stomach more taxes to try to do something like this. At the end of the day, we do need more people connected, and we need to have lower prices. So what do we do next, Kevin?
I think we just continue this conversation. It's moving in a positive direction. If anyone thought 5 years ago that without this conversation, Mayor Tony Harp in New Haven would have a plan to do it herself for New Haven, and also a plan from Frontier that not only finishes out the build in New Haven, but also lets other internet service providers compete on their fiber. If anybody thinks that would have happened without this conversation, they're kidding themselves.
But that's very important. Again, this conversation starts, the city of New Haven works then with the provider there. I mean, this seems like the type of matrix that you're talking about, Ellen, right?
Absolutely. And in fact, in 2 weeks, we will be releasing a white paper from the broadband office that will lay out different models for municipalities, different frameworks for creating public-private partnerships. It will take a look at the Frontier model, which is very creative and innovative. The first of its type in the country from an incumbent provider. So that's progress. There will be other models that's a toolbox for municipalities we will have answers for. So now what next? And then we're having a conference at the Legislative Office Building on March 23rd. For municipalities and officials, more conversation, more answers.
Ellen Katz is Connecticut's Consumer Counsel. Thank you so much for being here. Kevin Lembo is the Controller of the State of Connecticut. Thank you very much, sir,
Thanks,
well.
John.
You can continue this conversation. Just get on your modem and dial us up, Where We Live at WNPR.org, if you want to send us an email. I'm John Dankosky. Please have a great weekend.